Imagine that unbelievable new deck in your backyard. Outdoor Living Unlimited is Wisconsin's number one TimberTech deck builder. Building new decks and replacing old ones, creating that million-dollar feeling every time you relax in your own backyard. Looking for a company to make your backyard scream wow? Stop by Outdoor Living Unlimited's resourceful Waukesha showroom and visit OutdoorLivingUnlimited.com.
It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to another edition of WTMJ Outdoors. I always enjoy talking about everything that happens recreationally and all things outdoors in Wisconsin and beyond. This is sort of an interesting one. I'm not a huge camping person. My wife, Kathy, does not like camping, but I'm trying to convince her that there's opportunity there. I'm always about the positive approach. So you may have heard the term glamping. It's sort of this new way, popular way to sort of increase your experience, enhance your experience in the outdoors. But to do that, you don't have to go all in on expensive or lavish or even complicated to make that experience more comfortable. So we are joined on WTMJ Outdoors today by Steve Spears. He's a vice president of retail at Northern Tool and Equipment, who is going to walk us through that whole camping experience and some of the tools they sell that can help you make that a lot more easy and fun. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate you giving me some time today.
All right, so give us some basics. What tools can make camping, the experience of camping, which is different for everybody, more comfortable?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, camping can be one of the greatest ways to enjoy the outdoors, but we're so used to the simple things at home that it can make it challenging for some when they get out and actually start to live in the elements. So one of the ways that you can bring some of those comforts from home, probably the most impactful way, is with a generator, which is a gas-powered piece of equipment that generates electricity. And, you know, generators, you know, choosing the right one can be overwhelming. There's so many to choose from, lots of options, types, and styles, even brands. Which brand do you choose? You're not going to find a more complete lineup than what Northern Tool and Equipment has to offer. You'll get great expert advice in store, or you can just go to our website, northerntool.com, and use some of the buying guides to help you select the right ones. But one of the most popular ones for camping is the inverter portable generator, which is primarily the Power Horse brand, which is our house brand. That style produces a very clean electricity, very similar to when you plug an outlet in at your home. You get very clean electricity, no surging, and that's what you get from this style generator. They're also extremely quiet. When you're out camping, the last thing you want is an engine that's loud running all night long. These generators, these inverter generators in particular, allow you to plug a laptop in, a cell phone in, without any concern about the electricity, but it also is going to be much quieter. And when you have fellow campers nearby, that's exactly what you want.
So one of the interesting things that I noticed about this was it's beyond just the stuff you mentioned. You can actually manage temperature inside your tent, which is a big part of camping, as we know.
Absolutely. So if you have that generator, now you can, especially as we're getting now into the fall time of year, as it gets a little bit cooler at night, you know, using an infrared heater, plugging that into that generator, and you'll be able to keep that temp inside the tent at a temperature that we're used to, right? So even though you're out in the elements, it's not going to feel like you're out in the elements. And even this time of year where it's extremely warm, using a large drum fan or pedestal fan to get some of that air moving within the tent, again, can make it very comfortable inside, especially when you're sleeping.
One of the things I want to always emphasize when we're talking about new equipment or technology is safety. And I know that especially when you're talking about generators, you got to be really careful with some of that stuff.
Yeah. You know, there's always this desire to just fill the tank to keep it running. But you got to turn it off because it's a gas-powered piece of equipment. So that's a really important one. And it's also really important to use the right extension cords, ones that have enough cordage to make sure that they have enough a thick enough gauge to handle the power that heater or any of those other components are needing. But it's also extremely important if it happens to get wet, you know, being very careful with those cords. Again, you don't want to cause any kind of a spark or an issue, just like you would at home. You want to make sure you're very careful with those kind of things out in the outdoors.
The other big one, of course, is a fire extinguisher. This is a great thing for anybody, whether you have a home or apartments, or even if you're camping, having a fire extinguisher nearby in your toolkit is an important part of that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
All right, so we are talking to Steve Spears. He's Vice President of Retail at Northern Tool and Equipment. I know you guys do a lot of different things. You sell a lot of different things. What are some of the other cool things that can make camping or even glamping easier for people?
Yeah, I think a few others would be like outdoor grills. You know, the propane-powered grills are very helpful. Camping chairs to make it more comfortable when you're sitting outside. Even just having lighters on hand. But probably one of the more impactful ones is when you want to build that fire, that outdoor fire, sometimes getting kindling or dry wood is challenging. We sell what's called a kindling cracker, which allows you to take those logs and split them into smaller pieces of kindling, which makes creating that outdoor fire pit even simpler for those that don't do it every day. So, you know, as with all of this equipment, it allows you to, again, feel like you're at home when you're not at home, and that's ultimately what your goal is, to enjoy nature while still having some of those comforts that you have at home.
I imagine as we talk about camping or glamping that you've, as somebody who works in this business, understands that this is everything's exploding outdoors, from kayaking, which has become very popular now, the hiking, the trends, biking certainly, and even when it comes to camping and glamping, that's sort of just been taking off. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think more and more folks are just looking to get away, right, and get away from the day-to-day. And this is that opportunity to get out and enjoy their downtime in a different way. I've even seen some that are enjoying their time while they're at work out in enjoying some of this, right? So you can have the office away from home, having that Wi-Fi connection, and still be out in the outdoors is always a great way to experience it.
Tell me about your company. How long you've been doing this? Certainly want to have you give the folks an opportunity to find your great products. We'll do that again as well. Tell me about your company.
Absolutely. Yeah, Northern Tool and Equipment. We're a family-owned business. Been in serving those who do the tough jobs every day. Those tradespeople. Those that keep America moving. Along with those that aspire to be them, those serious DIYers that want to go to a place where the pros shop, where they know that a pro is buying their equipment, that's Northern Tool and Equipment. We've been around since 1981. We have 135 retail stores across 25 states, and we're really here to help serve those that do those tough jobs every day. We have a great website, a great manufacturing team that makes some of our equipment as well. We do a lot here at Northern Tool to take care of those pros that do those tough jobs every day.
All right. Everybody's always looking for these cool things that make your camping or glamping experience better. That's just part of what you guys do at Northern Tool. He is Steve Spears. Sure. He's the Vice President of Retail. Thanks for joining WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Lots more coming on WTMJ Outdoors on this Saturday. We'll do it after this on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. As we approach the fall, and I know that's a hard thing for some people to realize because we've been enjoying our summer here in Wisconsin, that means for a lot of people, hunting season, sort of the deer archery bow season, and of course the gun deer season that kicks off in November and all the additional hunts that happen after that. Who better to talk to than the guy at the DNR when you talk about the deer herd and deer management, Jeff Pritzel, joining us on the program today. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Steve. It's good to be back.
All right. So we're looking at a date in September when the archery season for deer in the state of Wisconsin, white-tailed deer, starts. I think it's Saturday, September 13th. So as we approach the season this year, let's start with the quality of the deer herd. Maybe talk about some of the things you've been seeing across the state when it comes to deer management and the deer herd. Let's start with that, the basics, then we'll get to some more of the interesting thing happening in Wisconsin.
Sure thing. Always the main driver that influences the deer herd in Wisconsin is winter, and especially in the northern half of the state, not so much in the southern half of the state, but we're coming off of now two consecutive relatively mild winters. So that leads to increased productivity and fawn survival, and so we should be seeing deer herds in the north trending upward, which is a good thing for most people in the north that have been participating and watching that play out over the years. It's always a roller coaster up north, but being on an upward trend is better than a downward trend in most people's minds. Yeah.
So when you look at the state of the herd, yes, it's dependent on the weather and the winters, but it's also little things like deer strikes by vehicles. I mean, have we seen an uptick in that because there's a bigger population?
Car deer collisions is always an interesting topic, and it's really a hard one to get good data on to use it as kind of a metric, just to see if there's trend information. And the reason for that is things have changed over time, both in terms of vehicle safety standards and accident avoidance technologies, which have been one since reduced car deer strikes. On the other hand, you've got, in many cases, at least in the southern half of the state, increasing deer numbers. And so we certainly see plenty of them. But in the scale of whether they're getting to be more or less, according to DOT statistics, car deer accidents have actually been relatively stable over time. But that doesn't necessarily reflect a stable deer herd. There's changes in the accident, things that influence it, and then even reporting strategies between county sheriff's departments have kind of changed over time. So it's not the greatest thing to use as a measure of the deer herd, but certainly when we're talking about a minimum of probably 20,000, car deer accidents in the state, and that's probably an underreported number, that's still a lot. And to the non-hunting community in Wisconsin, which is most people, they do have a connection to how the deer harvest helps maintain a deer herd, or potentially kind of keeps it in balance with both the ecology and the sociology impacts that high deer numbers have.
Jeff Pritzel joining us from the DNR on WTMJ Outdoors. It reminded me of a question. So when you made your first appearance a couple months ago, somebody asked me this question through email, and I'll ask you today. And if you know, when someone strikes a deer with their vehicle and the deer is killed laying there, is there a process where they can then claim that deer? We used to call it tagging a deer or whatever, but can they claim that deer for their own personal use at some point?
Absolutely. And that process was made simpler a couple of years ago. It used to be that a sheriff's deputy or someone would have to come out and put a tag on that deer to authorize the person to take it into possession. Now that can all be handled just with a phone call. I don't have the number handy, but on our website, if you just search, or DOT's website, you'll find there's a registration or a possession number that you can call and right from the site and say, hey, I just, there's a deer. And you might be the person who struck the deer, but a lot of times that person may not be interested in the deer, but somebody else is. Hmm. And so another person could come on the scene and say, I'd like to utilize this deer. And they can call a phone number and document it and take that deer into their possession.
So that number would be available on the DOT and the DNR website?
Yeah, DNR for sure. I assume DOT's got it as well.
All right, so this one is also one of those ones that's always frequently asked when people ask me about the show. When it comes to deer hunting, changes this year versus last year, what do you know about that?
Well, the big change this year is for those hunters that hunt in our two forest management zones. So the state is divided into four zones. Two of them, we have a northern forest and a central forest zone, and then a central farmland and a southern farmland. And then those zones are divided up into many individual deer management units. So the big change this year is that the deer management units in the northern forest zone, so like the northern third of the state, have been restructured so that the unit boundaries are based on habitat and landscape, not the county boundaries, which has been the case for the last 10 years. So for deer hunters that have been hunting for decades, they'll remember the gear management units we had prior to 2014, which were all habitat-based, and the boundaries were roads and rivers and recognizable things like that. We went to a county-based system in 2014. Now we're going back to a habitat-based system in the forest zone specifically, in the northern forest. They're not the exact same units that we had 10 years ago, but they're on the same kind of a principle, and they went back to a numbered unit system. And that comes into play mostly for people interested in purchasing an antlerless permit or a bonus tag, as they're referred to. And that sale started already back on the 18th. And so some of those northern units that maybe have sold out already, especially on public land. But if someone's interested in an antlerless tag, they need to become familiar with those new units. And the boundaries changed a bit in the eastern side of the central forest as well, and also went to a numbered unit system. So they just have to get familiar with their new unit name.
Jeff Pritzel from the Wisconsin DNR works in deer management, white-tailed deer. And we got upcoming seasons coming up this fall. We'll take a quick break here on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. After the break, let's talk about white-tailed deer specifically and some tricks of the trade. Maybe Jeff can share some of that with us after the break on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Our guest for a couple segments is Jeff Pritzel from the Wisconsin DNR, works in deer management, the white-tailed deer population. As Jeff said in the first segment, very healthy. All right, so obviously we know the difference between the archery season and the gun season is the implement you use to harvest those deer. As far as like describing what the experience is like, I know you're out in the woods, you're out in their habitat, you see the results of the deer harvest. Other than the weather, which is generally nicer in the archery bow season than it is in the gun deer season, talk about some of those differences and why it's the archery bow season is sort of a unique way to experience Wisconsin, especially in terms of the whitetail deer hunt.
Sure. Well, archery hunting, when I say archery, we actually have two concurrent seasons happening, but they're separate in that hunters can either choose to use a vertical bow or a crossbow. And so, you know, together we can discuss that as archery because the season dates are the same, so they run concurrently. But there, over half of our deer hunters in the state now, so of the 600,000 deer hunters, over half of them, 300,000, are purchasing archery licenses now. And the attraction to that archery season is first and foremost just the length of the season. You've got 3 months or more, you know, to participate. And so archers take a different approach because they're not as, you know, not to make it a pun, but they're not under the gun, you know, to shoot to get a deer harvested in a short window of time. So they can take their time and sit, you know, choose their days and the weather conditions and observe nature and the deer herd throughout the fall. And as their behavior changes, as we get closer later into the season and as the breeding season for deer, the rut approaches, or just a real attractive time to be in the woods. And as you mentioned, one of the things that comes with it is warmer weather. And so I hear people sometimes in Wisconsin, especially in September when it can be warm, kind of reluctant to, boy, it seems too warm to go deer hunting or too warm to shoot a deer. But what we have to remember is we're kind of on the northern side, of course, of the United States, and there are hunters hunting in Mississippi at the same time we are in much warmer and humid weather. And so hunters learn how to deal with that warm weather. It does mean thinking about, you know, taking care of that animal faster and getting it, you know, cleaned and in a cool environment, you know, to avoid spoilage. You have to take those things into consideration. But there's a lot of people in the state south of us that are harvesting deer, even earlier than some states, even south of us, start their deer season September 1st. So warm weather isn't necessarily a detractant. Now, you know, insects, we all are hoping that this high mosquito population we have this year kind of wears out before September rolls around.
That's the one big irritant that no hunter likes is the pesky mosquitoes. A couple questions. One, in your time at the DNR, you know, sort of working with the deer herd and the harvest, the hunting seasons, what's the biggest change you think, either from the DNR perspective or from the hunting perspective?
Sure. I think the biggest change has been hunter strategy and hunting culture in terms of the approach to deer hunting, whereas And part of this is this shift toward archery hunting and away from the firearm hunting. The firearm season is still the biggest activity in November because of the sheer volume of people. But even during firearm hunting, hunters have adopted a strategy more where it's I would call it a sedentary approach to hunting, where you really focus on picking a good spot to sit and letting the deer come to you, which can certainly have its benefits and advantages. But years and years ago, deer hunting, and partly because it was more focused on the firearm season, involved hunters getting on the landscape and purposefully getting the deer to move by moving around themselves and kind of, rousting the deer up out of their hiding places. And so 10, 20, 30 years ago, when you talk to hunters about how many deer they would see while they're deer hunting, they would spout off, relatively large numbers. And so commonly now hunters will say, I don't see as many deer as I used to see back in the good old days. And that doesn't necessarily equate to there being fewer deer in the landscape. It's really more related to hunting strategies that have adjusted to, we're going to sit tight and let the deer come to us. And when you do that, that means you're really dependent on natural deer movement and deer behavior. And sometimes deer don't like to move during daylight hours, and means you're not going to see them during hunting periods. And so that's one of the big changes, where people have really invested in really good deer stands and picking a spot and staying there. And that just means people aren't necessarily pushing deer or scaring deer that will result in more somebody else seeing deer because you've disturbed them. And so that's one of the things hunters have had come get used to. And it does mean that if you're not in an optimal spot, if you're trying to hunt in marginal areas, because that's all you have access to, unfortunately, it means, you may, maybe, seeing fewer animals because, other hunters in places where there are higher deer numbers aren't moving around as much and bumping those deer, to where you might get a chance to see them.
All right. We'll end on a fun one. And they're all fun. And these are great questions. The fact that we're even talking about hunting season is a sort of an awesome thing in Wisconsin. I'm a big fan of venison jerky. I'm a big fan of cooking hamburgers out of venison, throwing in a lot of garlic and onions, which is just my thing, and everyone's got their own way of doing stuff. I also discovered venison hot dogs recently, which I'm a super big fan of because I hadn't had them before. As somebody, I think that you're out there and you're hunting for deer. What is a recipe, or what is your favorite way to consume venison?
Well, my favorite way is just a straight up a venison backstrap or a loin on the grill.
That's that the easy night. Answer. Everybody says
I know.
That.
Well, you said my favorite.
I know.
I had it last night, so that's why it stopped my
fresh
mind.
On your mind, yeah.
My trim, or the meat that I, am not going to cook straight up on the grill, pretty much all goes to bratwurst. I take it to a guy that really makes great venison brats, and that's our bratwurst supply for the year.
I love it. Jeff Pritzel, he manages Deer Herd in Wisconsin for the Wisconsin DNR. Always great conversations. We will talk again right in advance of the gun deer season in November. Always appreciate your wisdom. Thanks for sharing it.
You bet, Steve. Looking forward to it. Good luck, everybody.
All right. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Lots more to get to on today's episode. We'll do it after this on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Love talking about all things outdoors on this program. If you ever have a comment or feedback, you can email me at steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D at WTMJ.com. All right. Lots of us are pretty familiar with what happened in the last few weeks in Wisconsin with severe flooding. And we're going to go in a couple ways with this conversation. And joining us today on WTMJ Outdoors is Lieutenant Nick Miofsky. He's Lieutenant, Milwaukee, Ozaukee, Washington County team. Simply put, DNR Conservation Warden, thanks for joining the program today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
All right. So I heard a lot of good things about the work that was done by your team and your group when it comes to sort of the incredible flood response. A lot of this stuff we don't think about. And as a conservation warden, you are directly involved with things like, retrieving boats and piers and other property that unfortunately, went into rivers around our state. So when you saw this happening as a conservation warden for the Wisconsin DNR, I mean, what kicked in? What did you start us walk us through what you had to do here?
Sure. So as conservation wardens, obviously there's wardens throughout the state in every county. And we work very closely with local first responders, fire departments, police departments. So a lot of times those calls for assistance come through those agencies that we already have relationships formed with, that we work together on a daily basis. So, you know, when the floods happened, we have those resources. We have boats, we have the training and operating the boats, we have the equipment. So when we see these other agencies that need help, we're there to assist wherever we can. So with the floodwaters and rivers rising and people needing evacuations and boats secured, obviously we're going to offer our assistance and resources to help those partner agencies of ours. So that's kind of where we got inserted into this effort, where agencies needed assistance and we're there to help out and work alongside them to provide the help that people needed. And we're happy to do it and happy to help the communities in Milwaukee County.
In your experience, I mean, we heard the numbers. Some of these rainfall totals were pretty incredible, like double digits. How bad was it?
It was the worst. I've been with Wisconsin DNR for about 13 years now, and it was the worst that I've ever seen it. And then talking to other agencies that we were helping out, it's the worst that they've ever seen it. And it was definitely something that the wardens helping in those situations hasn't seen flood waters that bad in Milwaukee County. So it was something that, you know, you hope you never see, but we're prepared to help out in those situations with the boats and with operating boats in those types of conditions. So we train for that type of stuff, and we're, like I said, we're ready to help out, and we're just glad we could provide some assistance in the county.
Wisconsin DNR Conservation Warden Lieutenant Nick Mayofsky joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. You had direct contact with a lot of property owners and certainly what happened as a result of the flooding. Are there some suggestions as a warden that you could give to people that say, you can never predict the future, and obviously natural disasters are natural disasters, but here's how you might want to think about securing things or offer some guidance when it comes to sort of lessening the burden when we have an event like this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously with the event that we just experienced, it was a lot, you know, it's hard to predict those type of flood conditions. And sometimes with those types of conditions, no matter how much you plan and no matter how much you secure boats or other items to piers, when floodwaters get that high and the flows get that extreme, you know, it's hard to secure items, and it's hard just to plan for stuff like that. I just think this was one of those unforeseen circumstances that happened fast. So it's hard to say that there's one thing I could say that would help people in situations like this, just because it was one of those kind of outlier situations. But I just think whenever you are securing your boats or securing something to piers, to use adequate lines and just to make sure that you're, you know, docking your boat appropriately. Obviously, we don't necessarily go out and train people on how to do that. But if you ever see a conservation warden out on the water, you know, we're happy to provide our two cents and with our experience and training as well, because we're in the same boat. We secure our boats to docks and piers, and you know, we try to plan for the worst. But like I said, an event like this, it's just hard to plan for it, even if you are doing that properly.
Wisconsin Conservation Warden Nick Mayofsky joining us, the lieutenant with the Wisconsin DNR. We'll take a quick break here on WTMJ Outdoors. After the break, I'm always curious about how people got to be doing what they're doing. We'll ask the warden that question. Lots more to come. WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. We're joined on the phone by Lieutenant Nick Mayofsky. He's got a lot of titles, but he's simply known as a DNR Conservation Warden. Not that that's ever a simple job. I'm always curious about how people get into their jobs. How do they, not fell into, but you said you had 13 years with Wisconsin DNR. How that happened for you, or what your story was that got you to where you are today? So I have a lot of friends who actually are curious about the DNR. They always ask me about it when I'm talking about what I'm doing on the show. So for someone who may even be thinking of a career in your field, walk us through how you got there and what your day-to-day life is in that job is like.
Sure. That's a great question. And for every conservation warden, their journey to get where they are is a little different. Mine, I started off my career in law enforcement in the state of Connecticut in their warden service or their version of conservation wardens. And what attracted me to that career is I wanted a law enforcement career. And then when I found out that I can merge my hobbies and love for the outdoors with a career in law enforcement, being a conservation warden, I felt it was a natural fit for me. Anytime I can get, you know, paid for doing something I love, wake up every day and do something I love, I knew I was on the right track. So that's what initially got me into the field of conservation law enforcement, and just, you know, wanted to be connected to the communities and help people in the communities and protect the natural resources that I love, you know, for the next generation as well. That's what kind of sparked my interest. And, you know, it's been a great career. You know, like every job, it has its ups and downs, but for the most part, I love what I do. I love being out in the community. I love helping people and interacting with people and protecting the natural resources.
That's probably why you're so good at your job. I always get questions on the show, and I encourage people to email me. And if you didn't hear my earlier email address, it's steve.scafidi2f1d@wtmj.com. From the, like, very obvious, I'm at a campground and people are making too much noise, to the, what if I see something during hunting season that I don't know if it's right or wrong, but, like, so is there a obvious way, or obvious what to do or who to contact, resource for people that if they have questions like that, they can contact the Wisconsin DNR or a warden?
Sure. We have a hotline that the number is posted at all the campsites and at our state parks and recreational areas. So if you do have a violation that you want to report to a DNR warden, calling that hotline, it's staffed 24/7. And if you call that hotline, you can report whatever violation to a dispatcher. And the more information you can report to that dispatcher, the easier it is for a conservation warden to follow up on that information. So that's one way that you can get a hold of a warden. If it is an emergency and you need to get a hold of law enforcement right away, 911 is always a good route to go as well. And in the counties that we work very closely with the local municipalities, the sheriff's departments in the counties, and 911 is called. A lot of times we work directly with those local agencies as well, and they can get a hold of us too. But those are probably the best ways if you want to talk to a conservation warden or report a violation to go about it. If it's not an emergency, calling our DNR tip line is a great route to go. And if it is an emergency, you know, always remember calling 911 as your first route.
All right, a fun one to leave on this WTMJ Outdoor episode this Saturday. Your favorite thing about your job, that not necessarily the day-to-day stuff, something that just, man, it just stands out to you as one of the reasons, other than your love of the outdoors, but something that just stands out, and it could be a small thing, could be a big thing.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot that I love about my job, but I think probably the thing I love doing is, especially we're leading in the fall with the various hunting seasons starting, and it's just neat to see the hunting tradition here in Wisconsin with, especially when families incorporate the younger generation into their traditions and their hunting traditions, or, even any outdoor recreation, camping. It's neat to see the younger generation getting involved and the history of outdoor recreation, hunting and fishing in Wisconsin, and just being able to interact with those people and just seeing those traditions carried on. And I think just being part of the community and being out and getting to know different organizations and different individuals that are just as passionate about the natural resources I am would probably what I would say is one of the favorite parts of my job. The people that I get to interact with on a daily basis that are just as passionate as I am.
I love it. I can see why you're good at your job. He's the DNR Conservation Warden, Lieutenant Nick Mayofsky. Officially Milwaukee Ozaukee Washington County Team, Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. I love the conversation. Let's talk down the line. There's a lot of great things you said today, and I certainly want to revisit some of that on a future episode. Thanks for joining WTMJ Outdoors.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
All right, you're listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620. WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Country roads,
take me home. As always, thanks for listening to WTMJ Outdoors, all possible because of the great work and partnership with Outdoor Living Unlimited. Eric Brown was on the show last week, and we'll have him on again throughout the course of the year. Great guests on the program today. We started with Steve Spears from Northern Tool and Equipment. As I said in the interview, I'm not a huge camping person, but I'm always optimistic that I might get back out there. And his company makes some really cool products, so if you can check them out at his website at Northern Tool. We had some interesting conversations, sort of DNR focused. On the hunting side today, we had our guy, Jeff Pritzel from the DNR. He sort of manages the deer herd, whitetail deer herd in Wisconsin. Jeff's a smart guy, long history doing that. And it's sort of that time of year now where we're starting to think about that. Even though it's summer, as we talked about, whitetail deer season, archery, obviously the first thing to happen in September, mid-September. And, of course, the gun deer season, which, as everybody knows, is like the most popular hunting season in Wisconsin. And as we get closer and closer to November, we'll have entire shows dedicated to that sport, including talking with some of the big retailers in deer hunting, some of the local vendors, even some guides in Wisconsin, and of course hunters, and of course our outdoors guy at the Journal Sentinel, Paul Smith. So that's going to be a sort of forward-looking look at hunting in Wisconsin. We wrap the show talking to Lieutenant Nick Mayofsky. He's a conservation warden with the DNR. Great conversation. It's always interesting to me that sort of the work that they do, how they got into it. So we talked a little bit about that in the last segment, about how he got into this and his love for the outdoors, his passion coming all the way from Connecticut back to Wisconsin. And we sort of highlighted the breaking news for even conservation wardens in the state of Wisconsin, the impact of that severe flooding in our state. It hits everything, including the outdoors, recreation, hunting, and in this case, our DNR workers and wardens and staff and law enforcement, public safety folks really, really did a great job in sort of responding to that. And as I mentioned on our regular show on WTMJ, I'm pretty sure we didn't see the impact with the safety of Wisconsin residents that we saw in other states when they had severe flooding. So that's a testament to the great work done by not just public safety folks, but also the great work done by the Wisconsin DNR. As I always say, if you have a question, comment, feedback, idea for a guest or a topic, you can always, always, always email me at steve.scafidi@wtmj.com. That's steve.scafidi, 2F1D at wtmj.com. Love all of that. Love that feedback. You've been listening, of course, to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.